doing an interview with Fern Ellis, and we're going to talk about when and how her family came to the Mancos Valley.
Well, it was a long time ago. The Deckers, and I'm a Decker, my dad was Neil Decker, my mother was Effie Hammond. His parents were amongst some of the early day Mormon immigrants that came from western Utah around Parowan and Cedar City, and they came across the deserts of southern Utah to what we call Hole in the Rock. They're at the edge of the Colorado River. They were called by Brigham Young to colonize southeastern Utah around Bluff to be a buffer between the Indians and colonists and to settle that region. My grandparents came along with three or four of his brothers and sisters, and that was a terrible trek. What began as a 6 weeks journey, they thought they were taking enough food and things for 6 weeks, turned into 6 months. We couldn't go back. There was nothing else to do. When they got to the Colorado River, they found it was impossible to go down. I think the only place they could have found anywhere where they couldn't go down, but anyway, it was one of the places. And so they had to send back to Salt Lake men with teams to get dynamite and blasting powders and things to blast out a road down that solid rock cliff to the Colorado River. Well, that's a story in itself. I could talk for days, or hours at least, about that. But they made it, and it was a terrible trip after they got across the river even. Because they had to make a roadway down to that circuitous trip down almost 3,000 feet to the water below. They had to drill holes and put pegs in of wood that they had brought back from Escalante, 50 miles back in the mountains, and then put those pegs in there, and then they would put limbs and driftwood or anything that they could find against those to keep the horses from going off down into the river below. Well, after they got across there, then it was a terrible, terrible trip from there to what is Bluff today. I can't imagine people going and living in the conditions that they did. But they came on to Bluff, and there, on the 6th of April, I think they got there on the 1st of April. They had started back in November. 6 months they'd been on the road. You can imagine what they had left to eat, which wasn't very much. And there was no stores along the way. Of course, there was no stores,
no
towns, no nothing.
Yeah.
No. But anyway, then Grandma gave birth to a baby boy who was John Decker's father on the 6th of April, 6 days after they had come down through home, or after they arrived in Bluff. And, of course, the baby was born in a covered wagon. They took the wagon off the wheels and set it under the shade of a big old cottonwood tree. Now, it would have been a little earlier than right now, and it's kind of cool now to have a baby out here in a covered wagon. But anyway, that's what they did. And then the land there wasn't very much land, and the soil was such that when they put the water on it, and make ditches, there'd come a flood and it just completely take out everything. Well, they tried to exist there for a while, and Grandpa hauled freight with his, I think he had a 6 span of horses, at 3 teams, and he hauled freight from Durango to Bluff in order that they could exist at all. And finally he decided that there just wasn't any way that he could really make a living and stay there with his family, and he liked the looks of Mancos when he came through. So they came to Mancos with everything they had, and that was in 1889. My dad was about a year old when they came. He had several brothers and sisters younger than him. And they settled, and they lived in Weber for a while, where Edna and Wayne Robb live now. And that land was on the land that belonged to, later became the property of my husband's folks, William Ellis's. But they lived there for a while in an old, kind of an old shack, tool shed, chicken coop or something, and with their covered wagon. And then they went on down and homesteaded some ground down south in Weber. Well, that's the Deckers, and they came in 1889. But before them, the Hammonds, my mother's folks, came in 1885, 86, 87, right in there. Grandpa came about 87 and Grandma came in 1885. My grandma had lived at Cedar City, Utah, all her life, and she had worked very hard because her family was poor. Her father and mother had been divorced when she was just a girl, about 4 or 5 years old. And so she had worked out at people's homes and up in the mountains, taking care of their dairies and their kids in the summertime and so forth. But there was a group of people from out there were coming to the Mancos Valley, and Grandma had heard about it. And in fact, her mother and her stepfather had come and had gone on down south of Red Mesa, between Red Mesa and Farmington, to a place they called Jackson. It was a little Mormon settlement. And they had come out there a year or two before Grandma came, and they liked it, and so Grandma thought, well, maybe she'd come over this way. And some of the Wildens, and Wilden is an old, old family in Mancos, and some of the Wildens and the McEwens and McBrides, and they all more or less settled over in Cortez. Some of the McBrides and McEwens are over there yet today. Well, so Grandma came along in that wagon train, several wagon loads of them, and that was in 1887 when she came. And then, no, 85, excuse me, 1885. And she worked at the First Lemon Hotel in Mancos, which was a little log hotel about where Josephine Goff lives today. Mm-hmm. It was the First Little Lemon Hotel made out of logs. And she worked there for several years, was the cook and wait the tables and build the fires and whatever had to be done. Well, then this John Hammond, the man that she married later, he had come with his father from Huntsville, Utah. They had lived there, and his father had been called to be, in the Mormon Church, a stake president. He was being situated in Bluff, and he would be the head of the church from Moab. There was no Blanding or Monticello. Moab, Bluff, Mancos, and then down New Mexico. There was Jewett and Fruitland and Kirtland, and then a little branch out near what is now Bloomfield, and they called that Hammond, New Mexico, after my great-grandpa Hammond. Well, then, and the Halls families came about the same time that he came down, and they brought a lot of cows and all the things, and the Halls family were a little richer than the Hammonds were, I'm sure, and their families came, some of them came on the train. No, wait a minute. No, they didn't. They came with their covered wagons. It was the Deans that came on the train. I got that wrong. That the Hammonds and the Halls came about the same time, 1885, from Utah. And then later on, John Hammond came over to Mancos just to visit some old friends, some of these Wilden brothers that he'd known years ago. And on the way home from, he was coming out Weber to visit them, and here was Levina Hammond, who was Levina Elliker then, and she was walking down town to go to work at the Lemon Hotel. And she thought he sure was a saucy-looking feller. She sure didn't like his looks. And he thought, that's the woman I'm going to marry. And he was red-headed and freckle-faced, and she didn't think very much of him. He pursued her for quite a while, but she wasn't very interested. But eventually they got married, of course. You know, if ever you say you're not going to do something, that's just going to happen. Well, they lived a long life together. So they were married in 1889, because Aunt Lydia was born in 1890. Well, that's my mom's folks. And then I told about the Deckers. Now, Vernon's folks, that's my man that I married. His folks came. His father came in 1883. When he came to Mancos, and this is authentic because before I lived in their home with my in-laws for 19 years. After we were married, it was their home, their house, and I lived there. But I loved those old folks. We had our disagreements and all those kind of things. We don't talk about that. but I'd always been interested in history. And before they died, while they were still, their minds were bright. In 1939, I interviewed them that winter, and I would ask them about their early lives and all, and then I'd make notes, and then I'd write it up, and I'd read it to them. And they corrected me if I had it wrong, you know, because you can hear me tell a story, and you'll tell it to someone else, but you kind of put your interpretation of what you thought I said. Well, so you have to be careful when you're doing that. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Papa said when he first came here to Mancos with his stepfather and his mother and his brother Joe, and two sisters, Herman Wagner's mother and the Smith's grandmother. Well, anyway, they worked over at Fort Lewis, the men folks did, hauling coal down to Fort Lewis from Hesperus for the soldiers there at the fort. And Papa would told quite a little bit about it, watching them drill and about seeing the men out there target practice and all. Well, then they filed on a piece of ground down under the hill from the cemetery, his folks did, where the first Mormon church was. And they lived there for a while, and then that's where he lived until he got married. Now, that was in 1883. Well, now, Grandma Ellis's folks, his wife, my husband's mother, they came through Mancos in 1879 from western Utah. They did not come through Hole in the Rock. They did not come that southern route. They took a route that must have brought them across through, and I think Grandma tells, but I've forgotten now. But anyway, they came through Moab and forded the river at Moab and then made their way and then came on down to Bluff because there was the road went that way. There was no road from here through Drub Creek and out that way. I have to talk with my hands.
Good.
I hope you
That's
can see
good.
It. Anyway, then they made their way on to Mancos, but they were called, there was a group of them that came, and they were called to settle San Luis Valley, a group of Mormon people, pioneers. Well, when they got to the top of Mancos Hill, and that night, their oxen wandered away. So the next morning, they didn't have their oxen, and the leader of the company says, well, it was in November. They had to get on over to San Luis Valley before winter set in. Of course, it was already winter, and the snow was about 2-3 feet deep there. They said, I can't imagine it that early in the year. But anyway, there was a lot of snow. So the company went on, thinking that the Bells would soon find their oxen and would be able to catch up with them.
What'd they leave with if they didn't have oxen? Did they have horses?
They had oxen for their covered wagons.
Okay.
But the others probably had some horses and all, you know. But theirs happened to be oxen. So they tried to find their oxen that day and finally met up with a Mr. Cavanus, who the Cavanuses were early cattlemen here in Mancos. And they met up with this Mr. Cavanus that lived in Thompson Park, and he said, I saw your oxen down where the Weber Canyon goes into the Mancos River. Now that's 10, 15 miles down the end, and they were at the top of Mancos Hill. So they went down, well, they found the oxen, all right, and brought them back. But, of course, by then, by the time they got to Durango, the company had long gone, and they weren't about to go on by themselves. They went south of Durango. The railroad was coming into Durango, and the railroad came to Durango in 1881. And the railroad was being built into Durango. And somewhere south, I don't know exactly, somewhere between Chama and Durango, he got a job working for the railroad. So they stopped and they found an old abandoned shack of some kind and fixed it up. And then a few days later, the mother gave birth to a baby. She already had six or seven. And Vernon's mother was the oldest one, 14 years old. And then that was just the way it was in those days. But anyway, then Grandma, Vernon's mother, 14 years old, took care of her mother and the baby and the other kids and did the cooking. And then here came the father with the several men who were working on the railroad who wanted room and board. Well, they didn't have any room. They pitched up tents. But then Grandma cooked for them, too. I can't imagine how she did it. I couldn't even cook for one extra person. Anyway, so there they were. Their company had gone on to San Luis Valley, and they were out. So they stayed there, and he worked on the railroad all that winter until the next spring. And then they moved down around Aztec and were there for a few years. And then Grandpa Ellis, and this is a cute story, so I have to tell this little story. Grandpa Ellis, here he was living in Mancos then, and he and several of the young folks went to down to farm, well, it wasn't a Farmington, Kirtland or Fruitland, to some kind of a church meeting of some kind. So the people would go and they'd stay all night with neighbors and friends and so forth. Well, they had a kind of a little party thing at somebody's house for all the young people that had come to, I suppose it was a conference of the church. So Grandpa was a fellow who was very shy. He always was scared the women was going to bite him, as the kids always said. But so the young men from Mancos made a bet that William Ellis wouldn't ask a girl to go to the dance. but he didn't realize that there was a betting going on. Of course, Grandma knew nothing about this. But anyway, so they went to this place. They were at somebody's place for supper. And Grandma was playing an old reed pump organ. And so the guys kept edging him. Well, go ask that woman to dance, ask that lady to dance. So finally he got nerve enough and asked Grandma if she'd go to the dance with him. So they went. Well, the next day they both probably returned home. She went back over to Round Aztec, and he came back to Mangus. Well, a couple of years later, I believe it was, the Bells moved to Mangus. Mm. And so they got reacquainted, and they got married. That was an interesting story.
Yeah.
Well, that got them all here. Now what do we talk about? Where they lived?
Now we talk about what they did when they got here.
Starved to death, almost. Most of them, they homesteaded. Now, the Ellises, because they came in 1883, and they homesteaded, his folks homesteaded down under the cemetery hill, about down below O'Brien's house, mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. the west of there. Well, then, when Papa got married, he and Grandma Bell, and they got married, and they moved, and they settled and homesteaded the place just south from where Smiths live.
Okay.
You know, Alpha and James and all of them. And they must have had 160 acres, I imagine, was about that. And they homesteaded, and of course, it was all timber and brush, sagebrush and mm-hmm. everything. So they worked very hard at clearing that land and getting their homestead entries in and everything there. And they lived there, and their kids walked from there up Weber to the Weber Country School, which was where the road turns west on Road G to go down by John Decker's.
Okay.
Well, the Weber School was beyond that. On, you know where Orgish lives?
Yes.
Bill? Uh-huh. Well, the little Weber School was just this side of Orgish's house, up in there
in
a little
the draw,
bit.
In the draw.
Yeah, kind of okay. up between there and Eberling's.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I know where that
that's
is.
That's where the Weber Country School was. Well, then these Ellis kids had to walk from way down there, along with the Smith kids and Shelton kids and some of the Halls kids. And that was quite a long ways to walk. There was no other way to get to school.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Hunt Country School. So then some of the Ellises were getting old enough to go to high school, and it was just too far to come from down there every day, ride a horse or whatever. And anyway, Papa got a chance to buy the place up Weber. And so they bought that and sold that piece down the canyon. It was almost down the canyon. And so there they were, and there's where they lived the rest of their lives and died there. And that's where Vernon and I lived till 1970. And we moved down here, and we've been here mm-hmm. ever since. When the Hammonds first came in on the scene, Grandpa and Grandma, they built a house right about where Bill Orgish's house is now.
Now, did the Odoms rent that house from the Orgish's? Or has Bill Orgish lived there?
Bill's still there.
Bill's been there?
Always.
Okay, when I worked for Empire Electric, I thought I talked to somebody named Odom, and I thought it was at that house, but I must be mistaken.
No, they were on down about three quarters
okay.
of a mile.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That place where Bill Orgish lives, my dad built that house after he sold the place where I'd lived till I got married. Then Dad got where he couldn't run the big ranch, so he sold that and built the house that Bill Orgish is in.
Okay. That's a nice place.
Well, it's a pretty nice little place. Uh-huh. They've done quite a bit with the yard and all, and changed a lot from what Dad had, but that my dad built that.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. The Hammonds then had a house right in about where Bill and Catherine's house is now. And then that house burnt down, and they lived in a little house. No. Yes. I have to stop and think.
Well, that's good.
When their house burnt down, they moved across the road in what is Graff's place now.
Okay.
And up behind that hill of grass, where all the machinery is, there was a house. Well, that's where I lived till I was married.
Okay.
But anyway, my grandma and Grandpa Hammond lived there. It was his brother, Sam Hammond, had that place. And then they sold out and went to Idaho. So when Grandma and Grandpa's house burned down, they lived in Sam Hammond's house for a while. And then they moved up Weber. They had a beautiful red brick house. Just as you turn to go on Road G towards John Decker's,
mm-hmm.
down that hill, on the left-hand side of the road, a big two-story red brick house.
Is that the red brick house?
No, no, okay. It burned. But okay. they belong to my two grandparents.
Okay.
The only red brick houses in Weber.
Oh, that one that's standing is beautiful.
It's a beautiful house.
I want you to talk about it. Yes.
Yes, I will. Well, anyway, Grandma and Grandpa Hammond moved into that house there. Then when I was 5 years old, 6 years old, that house burned, and I remember that. I remember my mom was hanging up clothes, and she went out north of the house, as we lived down there, up behind the hill in grass.
Uh-huh.
And Mom was out hanging up clothes, and we could see the smoke up wherever. And she says, "Oh, Mom's house is afire," so I had to stay with the kids.
Oh.
Uh-huh. I don't know that we had Carl yet. No, I don't know that Carl was born, but the two sisters. And that burned to the ground. Well, that was a terrible tragedy for them. Then they moved, and give all the history of the Hammonds now. They had nine kids, and they run a dairy up on Horse Creek. You know where Horse Creek is?
No.
You know where Hogback Mountain is?
Yes.
You know Hogback Mountain?
Mm-hmm.
Well, south of Hogback Mountain, towards the west end of Hogback Mountain, mm-hmm. down in there, there's quite a big piece of land that's been cleared quite a bit. The building still stands. And my grandma and grandpa homesteaded that.
Be fun to have some pictures.
Well, we have one picture, and it just isn't very good. It's only one that I know of. And they run a dairy, and they'd go up there in the summertime as soon as school was out, take the kids and the pigs. I can remember Mother telling about driving pigs, hogs, all the way, walking behind a herd of pigs to drive them clear
off
up there.
I've never even heard of herding hogs.
They're the hardest thing in the world to herd. They don't have any more sense than them and a turkey. Pigs and turkeys. But anyway, but they go take everything, practically everything up there and stay at this place in the summertime and milk their cows, 40, 50, 60 head of cows.
What's the elevation up there? It's pretty high, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty high. The snow is all gone now, but it's pretty high up in there. It was in amongst the Quakeys, and it was beautiful.
Okay.
I remember going and staying with them in the summertime up there for a week at a time.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
And I've written several stories about the adventures there. That was fun. But anyway, they run that for several years, and Grandma would make cheese, great big round cheese. And then they would put them in sacks on the backs of the horses, and they would take them up to Doyle Mine and the other prospect, a lot of the other mines up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would make butter and take it to and put it in the molds, take it to town to sell, and they sold cream too. And that's what they did all summer. They'd leave part of the family down at the home here in Weber. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of them would be up there. They used to. Anyway, then finally they sold that in later years. Later, they had it for quite a long while. Anyway, that's kind of the Hammonds. But they mostly dairied. They had a big herd of dairy cattle. And then the Deckers, my dad's folks, they'd homesteaded. You know where Dorfers live?
Yes.
Well, this would have been Kitty Corner from Dorfer's, possibly a mile from Dorfer's house, up towards the mountain. And there's a bunch of cottonwood trees up in there, the only thing you could see anymore. And they had a little shack there, and they lived there for not very many years. And then they had that red brick house that you know.
Oh, that I think is wonderful.
And my grandma was English. She came from England when she was about 9 years old, and she walked every step of the way from Omaha, Nebraska to Salt Lake Valley, holding to the hand of her dad. That's the way she tells it. They were Mormon pioneers.
In what year? Ballpark figure.
About 1856, 57.
Oh.
And so she was real, she had really had pioneers. Of course, all of my people are pioneers. I didn't go back far enough. I could tell you all kinds of stories. But but anyway, she was English, and she loved her English tea every afternoon.
Yes.
Though she was Mormon, and of course, Mormons don't drink tea and coffee, you know, aren't supposed to. But Grandma always had her tea every afternoon. I can remember sitting there and holding her cup and saucer and in her rocking chair and drinking her cup of tea.
Now, if her family came from England, how in the world did she get to this part of the country?
Oh, they sent a lot of missionaries over into England in the early days.
Okay.
The Hammonds were converted. Well, see, the Hammonds came from New York, and they were converted. And the Deckers were converted in New York. Well, after they left New York and came to Illinois. And let's see, but the Vernon's folks, the Ellises and the Bells, had both been converted to the church in Northumberland, England, northern part of England.
Really?
And they came in great big companies, and maybe 500 or more LDS people on a ship at a time.
And then when they'd
get to Winter Quarter or Omaha, Nebraska, they would spend every penny they had to either buy them team of oxen or horses, mm-hmm. wagons, and then there were the handcart companies. Well, that's a big story. I could talk about that for an hour.
What is a handcart? You're going to have to tell me
what a handcart is. Well, these were people who were very poor. They sold everything they had in order to get passage to come. But the church had put up what they called the immigration fund to help these people that wanted to come to America and to Zion.
Mm-hmm.
So the church had this, what they call the Perpetual Immigration Fund. And so they would loan people money to help them to get to Salt Lake Valley with the understanding that they would pay it back as they could mm-hmm. to help other people mm-hmm. come. Well, so they would get there. Well, then some of them came, and I think this was in the 1850s, 1860s. Somewhere, I can't remember, somewhere in the 50s
That's
and 60s.
Good.
And they got there and there were no wagons, no covered wagons available. And so they had already started with making hand carts. They were a big cart. Marge Halls has a cart that's similar, only it's not quite the same. But they had great big wheels. And then a small box in between those wheels, everything people owned that they could take had to go in that.
Well, and the people pulled them or pushed them?
And they pulled them and pushed and pulled.
Oh, gee.
All the way to the Salt Lake Valley. And many of them lost their lives. One great-great-grandma of mine lost her husband. To begin with, she lost a daughter with cholera
mm-hmm.
and was buried along the side of the road. She had to go on a lever. And then a son, 17 years old, the last anybody had seen him. Now, they'd go in big, long companies, you know, and they'd make a big circle at night and for protection from Indians and so forth. And they were Swiss. They came from Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
Zurich, Switzerland. And they couldn't speak English.
Oh, gosh.
And so they didn't talk much with other people. But that night when they made camp, they supposed that their son Conrad, 17 years old, was with the other young people. You know how kids are.
Yeah.
Just supposed that he was. And the last they had seen him, he had stopped at a stream and took his handkerchief and was wetting the handkerchief and wiping his face to cool himself off. Well, nobody had seen him after that. And the young people or nobody, everybody just come on, you know, everybody take care
yeah.
of yourself. And by the time they made the captain understand what had happened, they went back then with firebrands, I suppose, rags or something soaked in oil, or I don't know
yeah.
what. But anyway, it says he went with firebrands back as far as that river, and they called and called the rest mm-hmm. of the night, and they don't know whatever happened. Whether he wandered away delirious, which I would I surmise that's probably what it was, that he didn't know what he was, wandered off and lay down
yeah.
and either died or animals got him or Indians
mm-hmm.
got him. They never knew.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the father got sick with the cholera, and they put him in the handcart, and her and the other children pushed him
mm-hmm.
and pulled him, and then he died. And she buried him. Then she buried another daughter.
Oh, goodness.
But she came onto the Salt Lake Valley. But there were a lot of brave people, and I'm so glad that I was interested enough when I was a girl listening to the stories that the people would tell that when I got older, I wanted to write those stories down.
Yes.
And, of course, I had to do a lot of research and
mm-hmm.
so forth. But we're all a product of the past.
Mm-hmm.
What we are today depends a lot upon what went on in the genes of all the people from back behind us. I must have had some tough old people because I'm pretty tough. Anyway, that was...
That's a story about the hand cards.
And that was on my Grandma Hammond's line.
So that little English grandma that you had was...
Was a
Decker.
She was a Decker, and she was a little lady, very, very short. But she was real English, and she loved flowers, but she wasn't in the handcart company, but she walked. They were with the company that had the covered wagons, but
okay.
there wasn't room for them to ride in the wagons because they had them so heavily loaded. So she walked, 9 years old, all the way from Omaha, Nebraska, to Salt Lake Valley.
And how many How many miles could you guess that might even be?
1,500 to 2,000 miles.
Oh.
I couldn't walk from
That's
here
a
up
hike.
To... Yes.
That's a hike and a half.
I was teaching a seminary class the other day for Burl Porter. She wanted me to come and talk to the kids about the pioneers. And I was telling them this, and I said, how would you like it if someday somebody said, tomorrow you're taking wagons and you're going to go to Albuquerque mm-hmm. with everything that you own. But you have to remember, you can't put everything in that little handcart or a covered wagon, whichever mm-hmm. one it is. You've got to decide what's the most important. Well, you want to take this beautiful vase that was Grandma's, and you've just got to take that great big hand-painted picture of Grandpa and all these things, you know. The kid says, well, I'd have taken them. And I said, no, you wouldn't.
And all these electrical appliances that we have today.
That's all
they know how to cook.
All they had was an old tallow candle and so forth. But
now,
anyway.
What was the most important thing, if they passed this on to you, and you probably asked enough questions, they did, for, like, to cook, for the things that they had to survive for their kitchen? Did they make lots of biscuits?
They made lots of biscuits. Mm-hmm. Lots of biscuits. And dried fruit, dried apples, and beans and rice, and very, very limited diet. They might start out with maybe some potatoes or some vegetables, but that wouldn't last very long.
Yeah, and then they'd have to replenish those where they were able to homestead.
And when they came across the plains, there was no settlements. There was no place to get them after they got past Iowa, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Then there was just a long wilderness all across.